State of Arizona Board of Chiropractic Examiners will now come to order on January 22nd, 2025 at 9 a.m. The meeting will take place in person and virtually via Zoom. The board meeting location is 1740 West Adams Street, Phoenix, Arizona, in Boardroom C. Ms. Vanderveen, may I get a roll call of all board members present?
Ms. Angela Powell.
Dr. Kevin Lee?
Present.
Dr. George Camacho?
Present.
Mr. Mitchell Turbinson?
Present.
Dr. Wayne Bennett?
Present. Thank you. There are four board members present in person and one board member who is unable to attend. There is therefore a quorum for today's meeting. We will now state any conflicts of interest for which any of the board members will be recusing for today's agenda. If you have a conflict of interest, please state the tab number and the reason for your recusal. If you have no conflict of interest, then state the facts as such. Start with Dr. Kevin Lee.
Hi, Chairman. I need to recuse myself from tab number 5 for professional reasons.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Curtison.
I have no refusal.
Thank you. Dr. Camacho?
I have no refusal.
Thank you. And this is Wayne Bennett. Dr. Bennett, I have no recusals as well. That the record reflects that all board members have been furnished with the investigative reports and exhibits for each matter on the board's agenda. With each member...
Dr. Bennett, yes, ma'am. I apologize for the interruption. Can we go in the board's last hearing on the Watson matter? Dr. Camacho was recused from that matter, so I don't know if we need to clarify that.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, Dr. Camacho,
No, I'm going to recuse myself.
Okay, good. So you're fine that you have no conflict relative to that issue.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. Thank you, Ms. Cox. Ms. Bender. All right, let the record reflect that all board members have been furnished with the investigative reports and exhibits for each matter on the board's agenda. Would each member please indicate, as your name is called, whether you have received the board's investigative materials for each item on today's agenda and have reviewed them?
Dr. Kevin Lee.
I have received and reviewed.
Dr. George Camacho.
I have reviewed.
Mr. Mitchell Turbinson.
I have received and reviewed.
Dr. Wayne Bennett.
I have received and reviewed. Thank you very much. My name is Dr. Wayne Bennett. I'm a professional member, licensed chiropractor, and the board's vice chair. I will be running today's meeting in the absence of our chairwoman, Powell. I would like to welcome any newly licensed chiropractic licensees to the board meeting. Thank you for attending. I hope you'll find this meeting helpful and informative. You are required to attend for a full 3 hours, and staff will dismiss you at the three-hour mark. This time, I'd like to remind everyone to please make sure that your cell phones are on silent or turned off. If you're appearing virtually via Zoom, please mute your microphone until your matter is called. For your convenience throughout the meeting, vending machines, and for those of you attending physically, vending machines are right outside Boardroom C, and the restrooms are across from the elevator. This is an open meeting and is being recorded. The audio from the meeting will be posted on the board's website. Please be sure to state your full name when you're speaking on the record and speak slowly and clearly into the microphone. To protect the complainant's privacy, please refer to the complainant or patient during the meeting by initials only. What was scheduled for today's first item, tab number 1, has been removed and will be rescheduled. So we will now move to the consent agenda. Items listed on the consent agenda are item number 7, tab number 2. In the matter of cases recommended for dismissal, Dane Hastings and Jason Hawkins, and the cases recommended for dismissal with a non-disciplinary advisory letter, Robin O'Neill, and cases recommended for release from consent agreements, Dr. Arthur Mejia. Items on the consent agenda appear with a recommendation from board staff. Board members have reviewed all the materials and the recommendations. We're prepared to vote on each matter as they appear on the agenda. Pulling the matter means that you are a party or a complainant to the matter and do not agree with the recommendation, and you will have up to 5 minutes to address the board. If you do wish to pull a matter, please raise your hand so I can note that you wish to pull that matter. If the matter is removed from the consent agenda, be advised that it will likely have to be agendized at a later date. So the items for consent agenda have already just articulated. So is there anyone who wishes to pull an item from the consent agenda? If so, please raise your hand if you're physically present, or if you're attending virtually, raise your hand. I see none at this time. I will again ask anyone wishing to remove an item from the consent agenda, please make your wish known by raising your hand virtually or physically.
I don't show any hands in the virtual.
Nor do I. Thank you. Seeing no hands raised to pull any items off the consent agenda, the board will now proceed with voting on consent agenda item 7A, recommended cases for dismissal, and consent agenda item 7B, recommended cases for dismissal with a non-disciplinary advisory letter. Consent agenda item 7I, cases recommended for release or consent agreements. Do I have a motion to accept or deny the board staff's recommendation for tab 2, agenda item 7A, B, and 7I? If so, please state your name for the record prior to making your motion.
Vice Chairman, this is Dr. Kevin Lee. I move to accept the agenda items, the recommendations for the agenda items number 7A, 7B, and 7I.
Thank you. And is there a second?
This is Mitch Turbison. I second.
Thank you, Mr. Turbison. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion needed? Hearing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed by the same sign. The ayes have it unanimously. The motion to accept the board staff's recommendation passes. Good. We'll now move forward to tab number 3 in the matter of Dr. John Dickerson, D.C. Initial action case number 2024-0242. Dr. John Dickerson, are you present today? I don't see Dr. Dickerson in our audience. I don't see Dr. Dickerson identifying via Zoom. Dr. Dickerson, are you present today? For a third time, Dr. Dickerson, are you present? And if so, please identify yourself for the record. All right, we're going to move forward then in Dr. Dickerson's absence. Ms. Vanderveen, may we have a board brief?
Yes, the investigative facts and allegations are practicing chiropractic without a license and operating an unregistered chiropractic clinic.
Thank you. And in the absence of Dr. Dickerson, is the complainant with the initials AM present today? If so, please identify yourself.
Present.
Thank you. And AM, we will be referring to you by your initials only. I was barely able to hear you. Perhaps if you speak a little more loudly or approach your microphone a little more closely, that would be appreciated. Welcome, and thank you for participating in the meeting. Can you please, again, state your initials for the record?
Yes, my initials are AM.
Thank you. AM, the board members have read your complaint. Do you have any additional information that was not provided in the complaint that you believe the board should consider? You have 5 minutes to make your statement.
No, I do believe that the complaint provided sufficient evidence to support our allegation.
Thank you, ma'am, especially for your brevity. and so do any board members have any questions for the complainant, starting with Dr. Lee?
No questions.
No questions.
Dr. Camacho?
No questions.
Okay, let me make sure I don't throw my... I do have a question, and it pertains to a legal a matter. And so what I would appreciate is a motion to move into executive session for legal advice.
Vice Chair, this is Dr. Kevin Lees. I move that we move into executive session for legal advice.
Is there second? This is Mitch Turbin. I second.
Mr. Turbin, it's been moved and seconded to move into executive session. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed by the same sign. The ayes have it. We will, it is 9:10. We will move into executive session and return to meeting as soon as we can. 9:27, we are back in regular session, and we are in the process of deliberating on tab number 2024-042 in the matter of Dr. John Dickerson. We are at a point here where we have had the complainant say her piece. I had the opportunity to say her piece. We've read those materials. Now I'd like to begin deliberations with regard to the potential courses of actions relative to this matter. Let's begin with you, Dr. Lee.
Based off the evidence, and there's notes from him treating, I don't know that there's a ton of questions I have. I mean, he's not here to defend himself, but it seems like we have notes from treatment. Insurance companies have received those notes. So, other than that, I would move forward with
For the record, the issue here is that he surrendered his license in 2017, and now we have treatment records indicating that he was basically impersonating a doctor of chiropractic for a matter of years, and that's what we're deliberating here. Mr. Turbison, any comments on that?
I think that the evidence we've been presented is uncontroverted, and it does reflect a December 2017 surrender of license to the board. We have records of a patient PO being treated by Dr. Dickerson after that license all but going into 2021 and I think beyond that. And it looks like there's also these records bear his what appears to be his signature, Dr. Dickerson's signature, and it looks like we even have settlement agreement related to this. But and it does look like we did send to Dr. Dickerson, and it was returned to sender. So we've given him every opportunity to be here and chosen not to show up to defend him. Thank you,
Dr. Camacho.
It's pretty obvious. He was practicing years without a license. It's on notes and. And whatever the law required to take place.
All right, and it would appear that the appropriate action would be, you know, since we can't revoke his license, the appropriate action would then be to issue an immediate cease and desist order and to refer this to the appropriate legal law enforcement entity. Is that not correct, Mr. Hutchison?
Yeah, without with someone with an unlicensed person, the board's options are a bit more limited, and that's the standard procedures this board has taken.
All right. Are there any other deliberations appropriate? If not, would anyone care to make a motion in this regard?
Hi, Chair. This is Dr. Kevin Lees. I move to issue the respondent a cease and desist order and report this to the appropriate law enforcement agency.
Okay. And is there a second to that motion?
I said Dr. Camacho here. I second that motion.
Dr. Camacho has seconded that motion. Is there any further discussion of the motion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed by the same sign. Vote is unanimous. And we will move forward as indicated by the motion. That said, the question then arises with regard to the responsibilities of the employer. And Dr. Leeds, let's deliberate what our options are there. It seems as though we have a – oh, let me start with Mr. Turbinson instead. The employer, the business relationship in the clinics in which this doctor worked, there would seem to be – especially if billing was involved and so forth, there would seem to be some responsibility under rule and statute relative to potential negligence by the employer or the contractor. Do you have any comments with regard to that?
I agree with that, Dr. Bennett. I think at the very least, a complaint would be warranted to be opened up against Dr. Scott Stamp and Stamp Medical and Chirofit for a violation of ARS Section 32-924 for unprofessional or dishonorable conduct, based not only on what appears, you know, there would have to be some knowledge that a doctor you've entered into a contractual relationship with is unlicensed, as well as the fact that the address is or the address for Dr. Dickerson is the same as the address we have on file for Stamp Medical and Chirofit.
Dr. Camacho, any comments?
No, I have no comments.
Dr. Lees?
I would agree. I would think that we at least need to investigate this a little further. My concern is about liability. Who's responsible for the payment, if there are insurance payments that were made that may be not justified because the unlicensed doctor was performing services. So I think it warrants further investigation.
Okay. So I believe that the appropriate action then would be to instruct staff to open a complaint and investigate the allegations of and do we need to stipulate specifically what our concerns are relative to rule or statute here in a motion?
You may. At this stage, though, because it's preliminary and there hasn't really been an investigation, if there's something in particular the board wants the investigation to focus on, you can certainly articulate that, but I don't believe it's necessary to make specific findings.
All right. Would anyone care to make a motion?
Well, and to tailor, I think just to make sure we're tailoring the investigation to what we're discussing, I think that it's reasonable the investigation focus on Dr. Dickerson's relationship with Stamp Medical and Chirofit.
So, as an attorney, Mr. Turbinson, would you be prepared to
help
with the motion here?
This is Mitch Turbinson. I move that that board staff investigate and open a complaint against Scott Stamp, license number 6, and Stant Medical and ChiroFit.
And would there be narrowing of the scope of that investigation?
Related to any affiliation with Dr. Dickerson, since Dr. Dickerson's license was surrendered in 2017.
Thank you. Is there a second?
This is Dr. Kevin Lee. I second that.
There is a motion and a second. Is there a discussion, additional discussion relative to hearing none? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. And so the ayes have it. The staff is instructed to follow through with it. Thank you very much. And the complex one. We'll navigate. All right, moving forward to tab number 4 has been rescheduled. Is that correct? So we'll move to tab number 5 in the matter of the complaint number 2023-22, the matter of Dr. Thomas Niemstedt. Is it initial action on this case? Dr. Niemstedt, are you present today?
Hi, Chair. I just want to let you know I need to recuse myself.
Thank you, Dr. Lees, for pointing that out. Let the record reflect that Dr. Kevin Lees has recused himself on this matter. And let the record request that we do continue to have a quorum present. Dr. Niemstedt, are you present virtually? If so, please make your presence known by identifying yourself. I see a hand raised.
Yes, good morning.
Yes. welcome. And would please identify yourself?
Sure. My name is Topheus Anderson, and I'm counsel for Dr. Niemstedt. Dr. Niemstedt is not present. We were informed by Executive Director Van Der Veen yesterday that his matter had been postponed to the March 19th meeting, that he was released from his subpoena. He's been informed of that, and he would like to be heard. So we would request that the board move this matter to the March 19th meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Ms. Van Der Veen, may we have a board brief relative to this and to Mr. Anderson's comments?
I believe he just asked to have this heard on the 19th. So if the board's okay, we can just re-agendize this to the 19th.
Very well. Is there any objection to moving this matter forward so that Dr. Niemstedt can have his voice heard as per requested by his attorney? Hearing none, does that require a motion? I don't think so. I think we can just agree to move it forward. So thank you, Mr. Anderson, and we will do that. We will add this to next month. Already robust.
Great. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. It is 9:38, and we will move to tab number 6 in the matter of Dr. Robert Watson, 2021-32. Previously before the board, Dr. Watson, are you present today?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And are you represented by legal counsel today?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I see that. Robert, thank you.
Yes.
Would you please, Dr., introduce yourself for the record?
Robert S. Watson, D.C.
Thank you. And Mr. Crawford?
Bruce Crawford from Looker Smith.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Van Der Veen, may we have a board brief, please?
Yes. Excuse
me, I can't review any of these records. If you tell me I'm offline, an error occurred and I went offline.
Can we get some technical assistance for Dr. Kamachi?
We will get you some technical assistance. All right, the investigative facts and allegations are improper billing, improper unnecessary treatment, and failure to maintain adequate records. Just as a status note, this matter was before you previously. We did an additional subpoena and requested patient records for the last 6 months, and the board staff audited 5. And so those records were in your materials. And in discussions with Mr. Crawford and Dr. Watson, they presented to you a corrective action plan that he would like to execute and stay the investigation until he was able to complete that. So I'm bringing that forward to you all today to make the determination as how the board would like to proceed regarding this matter.
Thank you. Dr. Watson, board members have read your proposed corrective action plan, and I'd like to give you now the opportunity of 5 minutes to make any statement you care about with regard to it.
Can I just speak for him? Is that fine?
Certainly, ma'am, sir.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Dennett. So, again, Bruce Crawford. To update things, we got an updated investigation report, and on pages 8 and 9, It basically relayed the concerns about even the additional records that were submitted. So it's clear to me that we have to set up something so that the doctor can understand the board's specific complaints better, work on addressing those so we don't have a situation where this just continues to go on forever with audits where he doesn't appreciate exactly what the board's concerns are. So he actually retained Mr. Misko to help him with this a long time ago. I've talked to Mr. Misko and I've been extremely impressed. I asked him to come up with a corrective action plan that would address the board's concerns so that he could work with the doctor and try to get them, into the record keeping and practices that the board is satisfied with. Mr. Misko's work would be we would provide it to the board so that they can make sure that the board is satisfied with what is going on. We're obviously you're trying to avoid discipline because it is, even probation because it's a black mark and it negatively impacts doctors. And honestly, this is being provided to you, I think, in very good faith. The doctor's going to have to pay for this himself out of his own pocket. But it's an attempt to truly and honestly address the board's concerns. If there's something that we have not contemplated or that Mr. Misko has not, I will allow the board complete access to Mr. Misko to address whatever those concerns are so that that can be incorporated. So he's extremely well experienced. You've seen his curriculum vitae. He knows what he's doing. He's done this before. He's helped other doctors and he's helped other boards be satisfied that the doctor is meeting whatever requirements they believe are appropriate. So that's what we propose. I think it's made in very good faith, to be honest with you. And again, it's an open book. If the board wants to have access to Mr. Misko, if they want me to set up a conference call with staff so that everybody is on the same page, we are willing to do whatever the board wants. What I want to avoid is simply audits by the board that don't address the board's concerns, so the doctor's just perpetually on an audit trail. Or an audit program, I guess. So I think this addresses it and gives the doctor the education or mentoring that would hopefully satisfy the board.
Thank you. Board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Watson?
I do with regard to the corrective action plan. I think I like the idea of a corrective action plan. I do think the concerns you raise about continually sending the board issues that never get corrected is a valid concern because, new issues sprout up, although I do think there's a core of record keeping. My question is related to the corrective action plan keeps saying, education will be provided, but doesn't say what format that education will be provided in or anything like that.
Okay.
And so I do have a concern, you could read something in 10 minutes about all these things that could be the education provided. So I do have some concern about the education aspect of the corrective action plan and whether there can be actual, and it doesn't even need to be an hour requirement, but, we have approved courses and there are other courses that we typically go to in these circumstances. So if there's any type of, certainty we can get about the education and the quality of the education and what it entails, I think that would be helpful.
And that's fine. And I'm happy to speak with Mr. Misko about that and have him do an addendum or a supplement that we can provide to staff to address that. This is intended to be kind of one-on-one mentoring. So that's as good an education as you can get is one-on-one. Now, it is going to be virtually because he's, I think, in Chicago or out of state. But in any event, we do that all the time now by Zoom. But it will be like one-on-one mentoring, which I think is the best education that you can get. But I'm happy to provide whatever you would like in terms of supplemental information. I'm happy to set up a phone call with board staff so they can ask those questions directly and be satisfied.
Dr. Lee?
No questions.
Dr. Camacho?
Yeah, I do. You got this, Dr. Mr. Misko, to do this complete evaluation of Dr. Watson. Was he aware of the fact that the board went beyond the call of duty by requesting information or subpoenaed information off the scope of the complaint of the allegation?
Yes. I specifically directed him to the fact that we had submitted the additional five charts. I gave him those five charts. I gave him a copy of the most recent investigational report from the board, which specifically sets forth at pages 8 and 9 the additional concerns related to those records. So this was all pointed out to him. He knows exactly what the current state of the.
Now, was Mr. Risco aware that these going outside the scope of complaint allegation is contrary to statute?
He's aware of what the board's concerns are. He believes a lot of the information is there. It needs to be assimilated better. It needs to show thought process in terms of why are we doing what we're doing? How are we stepping back and re-evaluating things? So he's aware of all of that.
Okay. This is another point here. By continuing with these allegations, contrary to statute, this potentially resulted in unwarranted disciplinary actions and lengthy complaint investigations against the doctor. Are you aware of that?
He's read all of the documentation by the board. So, yeah, he's aware of all of that.
So, basically, this is actually for the board. You're aware that you guys went beyond call of duty?
We're conducting an investigation with regard to a complaint. We're not having a discussion about behavior at this point in time, Dr. Camacho.
We have a big issue here, number one. Okay, we just finished an audit, and the audit found all these statute violations committed by the board.
Okay.
Okay, now number one.
Dr. Camacho.
No.
Sir, you're out of order. You have actually, the audit, just to go on this point and then get off of it, no statutory violation was found by the audit.
What are you talking about? There's a stack of statutory violations found by the audit right here.
You are out of order.
No, I'm not out of order. You're out of order.
Okay.
You know what? I'm going to tell you one thing right now. This thing should be dismissed right now.
Okay.
Because it's beyond the call of duty.
Sir, this is your last warning. You are out of order. If you're not willing to go back to the point of this investigation, I will have to dismiss you from the meeting. Are you prepared to move with this on this complaint?
Let's move on. You got the information, brother.
Thank you. Any other discussion with regard to the matter at hand? Okay. So I will share my concerns on this matter. This is, I think, the third time we've addressed this matter, is it not? We had an initial complaint, and we had a follow-up, and we looked at records. And at that point in time, the records continued to be deficient. Am I correct in the history here? And then now here we are today. And
well, can I say something?
No, you can't.
I will give you the opportunity to speak. I'm just expressing my concern, and I will ask for your response.
Okay.
So. The concern about, we've talked about audit after audit, but I've only seen one audit, and it was a review by board members. It was not an actual audit that was followed through with corrective behavior. And so my concern is yours, that we don't want to continue to go down the same path for a long period of time. There are deficiencies in the record, and in the record keeping, nobody argues that. The other concern that I have, and it was raised by Mr. Trudenson as well, is that we are, we have a pathways that we move forward with to get behavior correction. If it's a 3-hour course because it's a minor deficiency, then that's what we do. We have a spectrum of all the way up to the most extreme thing that we do, which is when we see repetitive, pretty significant record inadequacies that we need to see a behavior change by the provider. And so we are able to enforce that by requiring audits. And those audits are performed by board-approved audit providers. And so you've come to us, and what you're asking us to do is to move to a different format other than what the board is typically operating on. We have a list of board-approved providers, and this provider is not on that list. And I wish that Ms. Powell were here. She's ill, but in our management meeting discussion of the fact that I would be running this meeting for her today, she, in her 40 years of experience with records review, expressed a lack of confidence in this provider. And so that's a concern. So those are my concerns. Doctor, please say whatever you would like to comment.
I'm going to let Bruce talk for me.
A lack of confidence in Mr. Misko?
Yes.
I'm really surprised at that because he works with a lot of attorneys and a lot of chiropractors. So I'll just tell you, I've been completely impressed with what he understands, what needs to be done. What I'm trying to accomplish is the one-on-one mentoring by someone who knows what they're doing, that the board's other route, I don't think that offers the doctor. At a minimum, if you would let us try it for a couple months and see if the board is satisfied. If you're not, don't really think this is an honest, good faith effort, then you can re-agenda this and you can go down whatever route. But right now, what you're proposing is just submit records for audit. We'll have somebody look at it. There won't be any real one-on-one mentoring of the doctor. And, you know, a major part of the board's goal is to, quote, rehabilitate the licensee as well. So
if I may, Mr. Crawford, that's not accurate. The protocol that we, the vendor that we use is a nationally recognized, not chiropractic medical record keeping audit and education entity, but they're an established company that does this across the spectrum of healthcare, and their process is intensely educational and does include one-on-one mentoring and does include audits. These audits are not submitted to the board; they're submitted to this vendor. So I just don't think your characterization of the protocol that we're following and please appreciate that I, for one, I can't speak for the board, but I, for one, appreciate stepping forward and offering a solution. It's just that the solution that you're offering, we have to have, you're asking us to go out of our, off of our board-approved list and out of our recognized protocol that we have tried to establish to get some level of fairness in this. And so those are the concerns we have.
Okay, well, I don't mean any disrespect of the board's process. I am simply trying to give the doctor the opportunity to have one-on-one mentoring by someone who knows what they're doing, very close, working with the doctor, doing essentially the audits and showing the results. I think that's a fair proposal. And I just, again, my concern would be you can say that there wasn't an audit, but there was previously the board staff looked at the records and raised concerns, tried to submit the additional five. We did submit the additional five charts. There's apparently continued concerns. If we go the next step, which is simply another audit, he submits records and that person looks at it, I don't see where the one-on-one mentoring occurs. So I think that's what's superior to what I'm proposing.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Vanderbeek, did you have a comment?
Well, just that in terms of the board's normal process, we recommend the PBI course and that they take the PBI course before they undergo additional audits to kind of address that. And part of how the PBI course works is you submit your records in advance as part of the pre-course submission, then they already identify the deficiencies. And so then the course is tailored to address those deficiencies. And then after the course is completed, after 90 days would be the first audit to see that you have time to take the course, implement those changes in your records, and then there's the subsequent audit, then the second audit, and upon passing the second audit successfully, he's released from probation and he could ask for early termination, was how the program is normally laid out. So there is that opportunity to get that educational component and get up to speed. And then there's also the option of you can do the entire program through PBI, where they do two post audits after the course is completed, and you continue you working with that same instructor or faculty member that you were engaged with initially when you started the program. And they provide a report support.
Any other observations or comments from the rest of the
How much is the cost of that program?
Mr. Camacho, Dr. Camacho, do you have a question?
I said, what is our cost of that program?
The board needs to recognize you before you.
I'm Dr. Camacho, I have a question. What is the cost of that program?
The course is 17 hours, and it is a $1,350 flat fee. And then if you do the extended with the 13 hours of post-course, it's $1,950.
So, well, they've offered to give this MISCO to do this information for Dr. Watson. Why, what makes it this one much better than Mr. MISCO?
You wish to respond?
I was not alleging that this was different. I was just providing the historical perspective on how the board has addressed this in the past.
Yes, Mr. Crawford, I think in your remarks you said you were concerned about the probation aspect of it, of the doctor being under probation. Is that what you were suggesting?
He's concerned about that's a disciplinary measure, and it does, as you know, extremely damaging consequences. So that's why we were trying to see if there was a way to do this, to address the board's concerns, just have the board stay. The investigation, we get this process going, we submit the stuff so that the board is satisfied that it's really happening. That was our proposal.
And Ms. Vanderbeek, is there a way to do this without, can't we offer consent without discipline? And only if it's broken does the discipline come into play?
That may be more appropriately
addressed. Oh, sorry. Sure.
So the board could order that the doctor complete whatever course the board thinks is appropriate, whatever continuing education as part of a non-disciplinary order. And I think the concern, the idea behind probation is that it's sort of a monitoring, but the board could also order that that respondent, as part of a consent agreement, the board could order that there be these record audits and the jurisprudence exam. It could be structured without probation as a non-disciplinary order, and then if the doctor violated that, it would come back before the board for a separate case where the violation would be a violation of a board order.
And that could be if he fails one of the two audits, that violates the board order?
So, yeah, the with the consent agreement, there's a lot more latitude. If the board thinks that's appropriate, the board could put that in a consent agreement.
Yes, ma'am.
This is a point. This would be different and not consistent in how the board addressed these types of matters in the past. So I just wanted to say that.
If it's non-disciplinary?
Correct.
Okay.
Dr. Leeson,
My question was more around what Mr. Trevison just kind of said. If we don't have a probation, is there a way for us to follow through to see if these actions are taken care of? He's passed the exam, he's done the classes, and he's done the two audits. But it sounds like we can do that in a different way. This would be ending this case, and if it wasn't accomplished, we have to open up a brand new case. That's correct. It wouldn't be the same.
Yes, it would be a new case for, let's say, the doctor fails to complete a term of a consent agreement. It would be a violation of a board order.
So, Mr. Crawford, doctor, if the issue is if the issue is about whether it's disciplinary or not, that's not the same thing as arguing about who the offender is, correct?
Right. Those are two parts of what we're trying to propose to the board.
Okay. And we're not trying to inappropriately discipline. What we want to see a change in behavior.
Okay.
And what transpired here was, and I have clear recollection because I was part of all of this as it happened. The records that came back were very deficient, and the doctor said, "Well, I've improved them since." And we said, "Okay, let's take another look at the improved ones." And the improved ones were worse than the ones before. They were quite bad. And we can go into the specifics if we have to, but we've already covered that grip. I don't think we need to do that. So no one's arguing that there's correction. No, and so we're all on the same page in terms of getting good records, sufficient records that meet these rules of law, the rules of rule. And how we get there, if we can get there with a non-disciplinary pathway, but still accomplish using a vendor that we are comfortable with and that we have seen proven results with and who does this specific task, that your vendor is a practice manager. His clients are all part of a practice management model. This is not a person who specifically does this as their level of expertise, and that's one of the issues. And so if we were to find a pathway that was non-disciplinary using our vendor and with a consent agreement that also calls for taking and passing the jurisprudence exam, what are your thoughts relative to that?
I mean, quite frankly, the carrot to me is the non-disciplinary pathway. If we could, I guess, delay the beginning of all of that, like 3 months, I still want him to work with Mr. Misko. I appreciate everything he said, but I have talked to him, and I think he is much more than a practice manager.
Okay.
And he has worked with other boards. So, you know, I'd at least like to get him started on that and working with Mr. Misko, so that this can be a successful process. We can send a consent agreement. We can have it effective a certain day. I just would like to get him going on one-on-one mentoring with someone who I think does understand the board's concerns and issues. And if it can be as a non-disciplinary matter, that would be great. And if he doesn't comply with it, yes, it would be a new complaint, but it's a very simple complaint. He didn't comply. Right? I mean, that's a very simple investigation to open up. And it's no different, honestly, if you do a consent agreement with discipline and the doctor doesn't comply, you're still going to be back before the board because they didn't comply with the consent agreement. So I don't think it really adds anything more problematic from the board standpoint.
Okay, so to be clear, Dr. Watson is free to do whatever he likes in terms of enhancing his record keeping. However, that said, what this board recognizes is corrective protocols from board approved vendors. And so, wonderful that, you know, more is probably better. But what we would require is that our vendor, the person, the entity that we have confidence in, and who has, you know, is an approved vendor by this board, be utilized in that process.
And you're saying PBI?
Yes. It's this board's discretion, but yeah.
No, and you made that very clear to me. That's the way you want to go. I was just saying if we could give him like 3 months to get started working with someone like Mr. Misko, so that, again, but when he goes on to the PBI program, hopefully we can get a successful situation. So I understand it would be PBI. I'm not debating that. I'm just asking if we can, you know, give us about 3 months to get him rolling with this person who can give him actual mentoring one-on-one, and then the consent agreement goes into effect, and we're on your program.
Okay, and board comments?
Yeah, Rick, our keeping, I was never able to review any of his, I couldn't come and bring him up his records. And so I don't understand what was wrong with his record keeping, but you say that you want a board approved vendor for record keeping. Dr. Friedman here in Phoenix is a board approved vendor for record keeping. I think he should be able to take that route.
That would be fine, but for the fact, Dr. Concha, that would be fine, but for the fact that Dr. Friedman does not do the audit course where they do the actual formal audits and give us the reports. Dr. Friedman, if it were a matter of just saying we want some education without also an audit involved to verify behavior change, that would be fine, but that's not an option.
Now, on as far as his record keeping, what exactly was wrong with his record?
Wow. Well, Dr. Camacho, you were provided with the records, and
I never saw any. I saw a lot of how about this? What was the reason for going beyond the complaint?
We did not. The complaint was inadequate record keeping. That was the complaint.
No, the complaint was something about billing.
Okay.
So that's what I understand. Why did it go beyond the main complaint?
It did not go beyond the complaint.
It did go beyond the complaint.
Okay. Once again, Dr. Camacho, we have this complaint before us, and we're dealing with this complaint. If you have issues with regard to board's overall policy of what or what
we talked about this in the past.
Yes, sir. But that's not within the confines of what we're doing right now. We're contemplating this particular case. And so I would ask that we confine our dialogue to this particular case. And it has been everyone here, including the doctor and his legal representative, are not stipulating that there was anything wrong with that there were issues with the record keeping. The real issue is just what are we going to do correctly?
Well, let's pursue.
Any other discussion?
I think that is a reasonable suggestion to delay. I think from 60 days to 150 days to complete the PBI course might be helpful. And I don't think as part of a consent agreement we would necessarily say you must go with Dr. Visco, because I don't feel comfortable going with someone that is not vetted and making that a stipulation as far as a consent. However, as you've noted, you better go ahead and get as good as you can on record keeping and get all the help you want, even above and beyond what would eventually be part of the consent if the board agrees with it and you agree with it, because we don't want to see you here. So I think those are reasonable and taking the disciplinary action out of this, and a justification for doing something different than we've done before is there is this good faith attempt to really fix things and go above and beyond what the board is requiring.
Dr. Lees?
Real quick, just to clarify, you mentioned 120 days or 90 days for the PBI course completion?
I think it'd be... Well, you asked for 90 days extra or 3 months extra for completion of PBI.
Actually, if we could just sign the consent agreement in 90 days, and that starts it. However you want to do it, I just want to give him the additional time to work with someone who I think can help him and meet your concerns before we have to start the process of the PBI. We understand that's what you want him to do, and so that's loud and clear.
So normally when we work, either do the non-disciplinary order for continuing education or any time that we require continuing education, it's usually 90 days. So if you wanted to give him an additional 90 days, that would be to complete the PBI course within 180 days. No, that would be, but I don't know that we would want to delay signing the consent agreement, but we could delay how long it takes him, the window he has to take that course.
That's fine. That'd be great.
All right. So what do we need in the form of a motion here?
So what we outlined for staff was to take and pass the Arizona jurisprudence exam with an 85 or better within 90 days. It would then be to complete the continuing education for medical record keeping, the MR-17 provided by PBI education within 180 days. And then subsequently after that, I guess maybe what we need to determine is does he want to have an auditor? Usually, sometimes we give them the option to either do have another auditor come in and do the subsequent two record keeping audits, or you can require the PDI extended, which does the two record keeping audits. And so then it would just apply. So it just depends on how you would like to encapsulate that.
Would we have to necessarily decide, or can we just say a board-approved audit, and that could be one pathway or another?
Or you could give them the option of either or. Do we have complete a record-keeping audit within 90 days and then a subsequent one at 180 days after taking the PBI course, or to participate in the PBI extended version with an AIM letter?
And would this be offered as a consent?
We would need to offer this as a consent agreement, yes.
My only point of clarification is my point of the 180 days is to give him a chance to spend like 3 months with Mr. Misko before we start doing the audits.
Right. Okay. So you'd have 180 days to take the PBI course.
Right.
And then a 90. So that should give you 90, like that should give you 6 months before he has to ever take the PBI course. And then the audits would be 90 days after the PBI course.
That's fine.
Right, so it's kind of almost like, yeah, charted out a little bit. Yeah.
I understand.
Yep.
I understand.
Board members, do you feel you understand what's going on here? Would anyone care to make a motion?
I'll make the motion. I move that to offer consent agreement for the following items, and the initial stipulation there is if the consent agreement is not signed within 10 days, this matter would be forwarded to a formal hearing at the Office of Administrative Hearings. So here are the items in the consent agreement for staff to draft. First, take and pass the Arizona jurisprudence exam with an 85% or better within 90 days. Next, complete 17 hours of CE in the area of record keeping for the course titled Medical Record Keeping, MR-17. Provided by PDI Education, and for it to be taken and completed within 180 days from the effective date of the consent agreement, and then to complete a minimum of two record audits with a board-approved auditor, with the first records audit being conducted 90 days after the PBI course completion, and the second record audit would be conducted 180 days after the PBI course completion.
And is there a second?
Dr. Kevin, is that a second?
There's been a motion and a second. And Ms. Vanderveen, are you comfortable that you have properly recorded that motion?
I'm happy to repeat it back to offer consent agreement for the fall, and it's not signed within 10 days, forward the matter to formal hearing with OLAP. The first is to take and pass the jurisprudence exam with score 85 or better within 90 days, to complete the medical record keeping course MR-17 provided by PBI Education within 180 days of the effective date of the consent agreement, then subsequently complete two record audits, the first being 90 days after completion of the PBI course, the second being 180 days after completion of the PBI course, and design a motion.
Yes, yep, very good. Okay, and is there any discussion, Mr. Crawford, did you have?
Well, I know I'm putting my neck out on a limb here. I start trial in 10 days. So, honestly, for us to meet that 10-day deadline, this has to get to me almost immediately, because when you're getting ready for trial, you're absolutely buried. So I just throw that out there. So,
and the 10-day clock usually doesn't start counting until we issue you the consent agreement.
Okay, that's fine. That's just a practical problem that I have.
Happy to extend it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed by the same sign. The ayes have it. Passes unanimously. The ayes have it. And so, let's get this pathway squared, and let's not have to deal with this again.
I agree. Thank you for being willing to talk to us.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, it is 10:17, and we are going to have a short 15-minute break, and we will resume in 15 minutes. And may I get some technical assistance from staff on internet? Thank you. Board meeting. We are ready for tab number 8, item 11, which is a whether to open case number 2025-006 against Dr. Mitchell Waller, D.C. Dr. Waller, are you present today? So please, you're not in the room here, so if you're attending virtually, please raise your hand. Dr. Waller calling out again. Dr. Waller for a third time. Hearing no response from Dr. Waller, Ms. Vanderveen, may we have a board brief?
Yes, this matter is before you as a whether to open, and based on the information in the complaint, board staff is seeking direction and clarification from the board in regards to, based on this information, is this enough information to open a complaint and investigate? Is this, improper treatment or practicing outside the scope of chiropractic based on the information provided? And so board staff is just seeking direction from the board as to how it would like to proceed with this matter based on the information in the complaint. And again, because this is a whether to open, staff is not investigated. We don't have patient records. All we have is the information that's in the memo for you based on what the complaint stated.
Thank you very much. And is the complainant with us today? Okay, she is not. All right, board members, you've had the opportunity to review the nature of the complaint, and the question is whether we are should at this point, based upon the allegations, information provided, open a complaint. Dr. Lees, any comments?
My question was, the initial complaint revolved around whether the pain injections were justified or needed, and it seemed like they were doing it for monetary benefit only. But pain injections would be hopefully given by a medical professional, not by the chiropractor. So I'm not sure if we would be looking to the right person. I think the justification would have to come by whoever it is that prescribed the pain injection.
Are you saying that the patient or the complainant alleges that the recommendation came from a chiropractor? And are you saying that, I'm not sure I understand your comment, is it either that it appears that would be an inappropriate action by the chiropractor, or are you saying that in order to determine where the recommendation came from, that we would have to determine that?
That would be my question. If the chiropractor is justifying the need for pain injections, that would be a concern. There should be some kind of exam done by a medical professional that's licensed to do pain injections, but I imagine we would have to open an investigation to find that information out.
Okay. Any other comments or questions?
Was the complainant notified of this meeting?
Yes, yeah.
But my only concern is a lot of this, it almost seems like this developed into a complaint before it actually should have. A lot of the descriptions of the complaint make it sound like this is all potential recommendations or something that no action was actually taken, nothing happened. It appears that maybe there wasn't even a doctor-patient relationship that developed if this was just an initial consult. And so I just think this is a little premature. I understand that, I'm just thinking about if we were to open a complaint, what would we get out of this? We're going to get probably no patient record, maybe a patient record, but not a lot. And so I just don't see what we'd actually going on if we open a complaint.
Okay, and if we were to open a complaint, that's part of what we would be worrying about.
Yes, we could ask for the patient records, the intake paperwork as part of the investigation.
Dr. Camacho?
The complainant states that he was going to give injections and adjustments every time she went in. Is the person here?
No, they're not attending. They're not present. So,
I don't know how would you pursue this, like you said, and just, no.
Yeah, I agree that we have a paucity of information, but we also have some serious allegations. The complainant alleges that the physician recommended injections. The real question here is, was this an evaluation and management encounter, or was it a consult? If an actual treatment recommendation was made, then there are specific mandates on what has to happen in an evaluation and management encounter, include taking a history and performing some level of examination before any plan of care is provided. And the complainant alleges that they were there for 5 minutes. Clearly, an appropriate history and exam and so forth, pretty difficult to do that in 5 minutes. And so on the one hand, it looks as though this is a pretty significant if in fact there was a true doctor-patient relationship evaluation and management encounter, Did it meet the level, and were recommendations made outside the scope? These are things that are concerned. The patient also states that there was no informed consent. And so once again, the question then becomes, in a consultation where there's no doctor-patient relationship established, there's no need for an informed consent. But do we know that, we don't know what that was. We don't know what the encounter was. And so in order to determine whether or not this is an actionable, potentially actionable event or worth further inquiry, we would have to get that information. So then my question to you, Board, is does it rise to the level where we have enough concern that there may be something going on that we then open the complaint, find out, and if we find out that it was just a consultation with no E&M encounter, no doctor-patient relationship, and so forth, we would certainly have the opportunity to dismiss it. On the other hand, we can take no action because we don't have confidence that there would be anything that would support with sufficient credence the allegation. That's Mr. Hutchinson. Am I stating it correctly?
Yeah, that's, I couldn't have put it better myself.
Well, so I guess that's what we need to deliberate here. Again, I guess I'll do another round. Dr. Camacho?
Did the person ever receive any care?
That's what we don't know. How would that bear?
I don't think we should waste our time. Why are we going to bring the investigator or anybody in to do this when there's really nothing there? I mean, did the person even present herself here?
Okay.
So I think at this point, unless we really have something involved, we really don't have nothing involved other than this person stating this information.
Okay. Ms. Vendry?
Just for clarification, for whether to open, there's no requirement for the doctor or the complainant to appear before the board. It's strictly optional because it's a procedural step in the process.
Mr. Trevison?
I just had one other question. I see the in the complaint, the doctor's name is Michael Waller. Are we sure we have the right?
It's Mitchell.
Okay.
This one wasn't my case, but I did cross-reference.
Okay, so we're confident we have the right doctor.
We do.
Okay.
That's just right here. Dr. Wall, and then the bottom it says open a complaint against Dr. Gordon.
What document are you looking at, Dr. Kamal?
Under our staff recommendations, there was a typo in the report. I apologize for that.
Okay. So the intent was open, Dr. Lee?
I think it's worth opening just to get eyes on it. Like you said, if it's just a consultation, there was no exam done, and the patient decided not to, proceed with any examination, then we just let it go from there. If there's no treatment done, and they were just giving kind of a scope of their practice, we could find out after an investigation.
And the I guess to underline what you've said, if there was non-event, then it was a non-event, and we move on. And were it not for the fact that this even if the patient elected not to receive care, if this is a practice of this doctor, and if they're even like billing for this and those kinds of things, then it becomes something that's reasonably serious. That's just my two cents. Any further discussion? All right. I then would entertain a motion either to open a complaint or to take no action.
I motion to take no action.
It's been moved by Dr. Camacho to take no action. Is there a second? There is no second. Is there an alternative motion?
Dr. Kevin Lee, I open the complaint, or I move to open a complaint against Dr.
Been moved to open a complaint. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Been seconded by Mr. Trevinson. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we will vote. All those in favor of opening a complaint signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed by same sign?
Nay.
So the vote is 3-1. It passes. We will open a complaint based on the basis of the content of the complainant's report. All right. I believe we have all of the cases taken care of. Now we'll move to tab number 9, which is today's executive director's report. Ms. Vandery.
For my monthly report, first, as always, is our complaint statuses. You can see that we're in terms of pending complaints for 2025, that's starting to grow. We have 8 currently that are in our new intake process. So just in improvements from the audit, we now have a monthly meeting with Mr. Hutchinson where we meet and review complaints, assign the allegations and statutory violations, and then are sending those complaints out. So that process is begun and it is ongoing. And so there are still 8 that we need to assign levels and priority to and be sent out for response. So this is in process, in flight, and is developing, and the policy to support that will be coming before you as part of this audit process and finalizing these items. Total cases right now, we have a total of 72 open cases. You can see from 2024, we had a total of 57. There are still 32. There are still 13 cases as of this meeting. We'll be reducing that number after this meeting. One of the cases from 2021, Dr. Watson, once he signs that consent agreement, that will close out kind of the last of the 2021 cases. We have a total of 21 cases already received for 2025. So you can see we're about on trend for our case number. Cases on the agenda, last meeting we had 9, you closed 9 of those, and on this agenda we had 6. We're starting to kind of get our momentum back as we close out the audit, on board the rest of the staff, so things are starting to move again, and so hopefully we will be able to pick up that momentum that we had kind of in 2023. Again, just by priority, kind of showing the number of blue cases, which are medium, the number of just open cases. Obviously, we still have a few in 2023, 2024, 25, starting to close out those numbers. But if you'll remember, as I always tell you, we started this process with complaints open back. We are much better set. Total cases over 180 days is 54. Continuing to try to address that, prioritize those, and move those forward. In terms of cases that are pending formal hearing or formal interview, we don't have any. The only ones we have left have been continued, and the investigation on those is ongoing. Switching gears from complaints to licensing, for this year, we've received 57 applications. We've issued 43 licenses. Renewal applications, remember now we're on this rolling calendar. So already this year for January renewals, we've received 94, and that's going back to October. So that process is moving. Continuing education applications, last month I reported 93. My slide didn't update, but we have 150 applications. You can see that we've received 150, we've processed 90, still have 40 pending. Also regarding the board's financials, so we're starting, as we talked about moving to that rolling renewal cycle. We don't have that infusion of revenue that we usually start to see in November, December, as renewals start to come in. But as you can see, it's starting, as we're starting to collect those monthly renewals, that revenue is starting to increase. So just kind of the trajectory of where we are as in regards to time passed to the estimated number percent of revenue. We've only still received 11% of our total revenue. And remember, the expectation is this year we should only get about 50%, because difference between the calendar year and the state fiscal year, we're only going to collect through this renewal cycle 50% of what we normally bring in an annual renewal cycle, because there's only 6 months in this calendar year for the renewal, because we didn't have any renewals last year. So that's kind of anticipated. and then also our expenditures are below where we should be. We're only at 39% of what we should have expended by this point. We should have expended 50. So we're a little bit below our expenditures as well. And some of that's due to vacancy savings that we were operating with a reduced staff and just other operational cuts that we've made. I just laid out for you kind of the appropriation, the fund balance, and you can kind of see there's 3 months where revenue was below where we projected, but like this month is higher than what we had anticipated in terms of revenue collected, so that's good. We are also still, again, as I said, below in regards to actual expenditures versus projections. So far, everything seems to be healthy, but if as revenue continues to come in, there's the potential of about a $10,000 shortfall in the difference between revenue collected and our appropriated amount in regards to how the board's been appropriated. And most of that is due to that $500,000 that they swept last year. So, and monitoring that closely. Again, just kind of a visual of where money is and how the fund, obviously you can see, is trending down, and expenditures and revenue are trending upwards. So we'll just continue to monitor that. Also, there is legislation that was introduced by Senator Kavanaugh that directly affects the board and how our appropriations. The way the language reads is that the board would be allowed to keep 2 years of operating funds in their revolving account plus 5%. Do you have room for any project or anything like that that maybe you were working on that you would be allowed to kind of, that would be the expected level of the revolving funds for the board, and that should the board would be required annually to review its fees, review its projections in regards to that fund, and should the board identify that it would be above that, it would need to reduce fees to get the fund back under that threshold. And then that way the funds go back to the licensee population and are not swept into the general fund. And then the board would receive an exemption should the legislature not fund the board's budget request. You would not be required to return those fees if you did not get your budget request appropriated. That legislation is out there now. It was introduced before session. And other updates that are not in this part of my report is, as I notified all of you, we've made some staffing changes. Ms. Gillum has been promoted to deputy director. The part of her responsibility as deputy director is she will be overseeing the board investigator and the investigation side of things. And then also at our last meeting, I introduced you to Amber, and she is now the board's administrative support. So she's answering those phone calls, those emails, processing renewals, continuing education applications. So we are finally back to a staff of five. And now we're in the process of backfilling Ms. Gillum's position and hiring a second investigator, kind of start taking that part of our staffing. So that's where we are staff-wise. So things are better. I think things have started to stabilize, and I think we should be able to functioning better as we're not so significantly short-staffed as we've been since April. So that is all of my updates, unless you have questions.
A couple questions. Yeah. Comment, congratulations, Bonnie, on your promotion.
Thank you.
Can you give us an update on, we're through the audit. We have been short-staffed even while we were going through the audit. We're through the audit, we were hampered by Fincia, and through the audit, we've got more staff coming up to speed, getting back to the trend we were on in 2023 before whatever happened.
Mm-hmm.
The only question that I have, the only thing that you haven't really touched on is we had been anticipating that all of the inefficiency that was rained down upon us through our implementation of Fincia would ultimately bear productive fruit. Can you give us hope of fruit?
I apologize. I should have included that more in my report. There is. There absolutely is. So, as you recall, one of the strategic changes this board made was moving from annual license renewals in December, which devastated staff in another way, which is you're getting so many in, you can't process them fast enough. And so it was taking all five of us to answer phone calls and process them. And the turnaround time was, sometimes up to 6 weeks. We got everything done by that February 1st deadline, getting those renewal cards out. That is now, as I stated, it's a rolling process. So we're receiving about 200 a month. So what used to take five of us and a good 3-month chunk of our business calendar to process is now being handled by currently one staff at a minimum two, and those renewal applications are being turned around within 24 to 48 hours. So that delay for our licensees in terms of getting that updated renewal is absolutely happening in a much faster time frame. Additionally, not only are we processing those renewals, but we're doing 100% CE audit. As you recall, part of the new renewal application is that they're required to submit those CE certificates. So she's processing that, auditing them at the same time that we're doing that process. And again, it's taking us less than 24 to 48 hours to turn those around. So a much more streamlined process. The same is true for CA applications. Those are being, you know, handled daily and cleared out. And now those chiropractic assistants are part of the online lookup. So you can go online, look up a chiropractic assistant. The public can go online and look those up, which that's a huge new transparency item as well. So we're continuing to streamline that. We have really robust and detailed discussions with the state's procurement office, and we are in the process of signing the MSA for CE broker to build that component into this, which will move our CE applications into CE broker, and we'll have a platform and a portal for our CE applicants as well. So we'll get to move away from those paper applications. It'll be something that the industry is more familiar with because they're already using it in other states. So I believe that will be a more transparent and probably more effective and a welcome change from our CE provider population as well.
Good. Thank you. And by way of follow-up, one of the things that was one of the recommendations relative to allegations that the board was expanding investigations outside of the basis of the original complaint was this issue of just making it a practice to verify continuing education, which, as the board knows, in the past had been that we were just whenever there was a complaint, we would automatically check their CE requirements as well. And the recommendation was that was extending our investigation, and so obviously we've stopped doing that. It was, I guess, discriminatory towards people who were being investigated versus doing an across-the-board audit of everybody. And so now I believe what I heard you say is with Finchia, that process will just happen universally, and we will not have the need to do that as a board if it serves us as it's designed to.
Correct. It's now part of the renewal process, and so we are auditing 100% of everyone as we accept those applications and processes.
Any other questions?
I'll follow up on that. So then it would be a renewal. We deny renewal and say you don't have enough CE, and then would the board then get a complaint, or the doctor could go finish this?
So what happens is they're marked incomplete, so there's a deficiency option now in Finchia, so they're marked deficient for not having enough continuing ed because either it's not an approved course or they didn't submit enough hours. They have 60 days to cure that. Then if they don't cure it within the 60 days, then their license is put on administrative suspension and they have to pay the late fee and provide the information. So those steps happen before it would come before you.
Okay. Next item.
That completes my report.
Okay. So next on the agenda is item 19, report from the chair, summary of current events. The chair is not present with us. I have not had the opportunity to speak with Ms. Powell with regard to what she wished to have conveyed. I will simply comment that, as you all know, we've completed the audit process. Our resources can be redirected, as you've heard, back to bearing the fruit that we were discussing a moment ago. that's the report that I, as chairman. On behalf of the chairman, any questions with regard to that topic? All right, item 20. Next on the agenda is item 20, future agenda items. This is the time and place for members of the board to request an item be placed on a future meeting agenda. Do any board members have an item that they wish to place on a future meeting agenda? Please, if you do so, please state it for the record. Hearing none, we move forward to item 18, call to the public. You have up to 2 minutes to make a statement on the record.
Wait. I think we skipped. I must have messed up your script. and I apologize. But I believe item 18 should be the Assistant Attorney General's report and training on how
to. Oh, my goodness. I was hoping to avoid that. No offense. And I'm fine. I didn't hope to avoid it. Okay. Thank you for your correction. And next on the agenda is item 18, which is training for board members and board staff on training how to be a good board member. Training will be provided by the Arizona Assistant Attorney General as part of the board's ongoing mission to ensure that we are compliant with Arizona statutes and rules. Mr. Hutchins.
Well, all right. I will try not to take too long here because I think everything I'm about to say, this should not be the first time anyone's hearing it. I've just got a few just sort of tips to keep in mind in being a good board member. The first one is, and I know it sounds obvious, but be prepared. Review all your board materials ahead of time. If it helps, take notes, outline thoughts, organize your questions, and have a general sort of familiarity with board statutes and rules, not a granular, intimate knowledge of them, but just sort of generally what how they work and what the board can and can't do. Pay attention and stay alert. If you're not prepared to do that, then it could present the due process issues down the line. My next one, be fair. I know we talked last meeting about ex parte communications a lot, so I will gloss over that and talk about conflicts of interest. This, again, shouldn't be any news to anyone here. Obviously, if you have a conflict of interest, you can't participate in any legal actions the board takes. There are two different kinds. There are statutory conflicts that you have to recuse yourself because of. That's really just pecuniary or proprietary interest. If you stand to make money somehow off the board's decision, that would be a statutory conflict for which you'd have to recuse. But there's all sorts of potential conflicts that may not rise to that level, like knowing people subject coming before the board for whatever reason, knowing lawyers, knowing witnesses, having personal knowledge about any of the cases, if you're biased or prejudiced. Generally speaking, do a gut check on those. The only person who's going to know if that's disqualifying is going to be you. So if you think you're not able to be fair and impartial for whatever reason, then don't participate in the action, whatever action that is the board takes. Next, remember that in these board meetings we're always on the record, so be mindful of how you behave and everything you say at a board meeting. Assume that everything that happens is a public record and may come back when you least expect it to. Be polite to everyone who comes before the board. Address them formally. Don't do anything that if you heard it on the record 6 months from now, you would regret. That includes, I've got a bit of a side here about the procedure. The rules of procedure, they're not the lots of boards use, like Robert's rules or something close to that. It's not actually required by statute, but it helps keep everyone aware of what going on in the meeting, and it keeps everyone on track, which I guess goes back to the on the record part. The public perception of the board is just as important. So and this also goes back to the when we're going through agenda items, speak clearly. People in the back should be able to hear you. Specify what you're talking about to the extent that you think, again, if someone's listening to this meeting 6 months from now, maybe even longer, that they understand what's going on, what we're talking about. And again, I talked about ex-party communications last time. Just don't talk to people outside of the board meeting. Don't talk to parties to these anything that's going before you outside of this context, even if it is harmless, could give the impression of something more nefarious going on. So it's best to just avoid anything that might give anyone the wrong idea. This also, next one, goes back to sort of being aware of court statutes and rules, just a general understanding of the state public record laws. Again, not super in-depth knowledge, but understand that everything the board does it should be available to the public, so the public has the right to be informed of board business, that what the board talks about has to be posted publicly ahead of time, that you can't talk about anything that's not already on that posted agenda, and that the when there's a time set on the agenda, that the meeting can't start before that. Executive sessions, I think the general, a good sort of rule of thumb is that they are the exception and not the rule during public meetings, so be careful and don't use them unless you really have to. Generally, it's better that everything be conducted in a public meeting unless there's a really good reason. Legal advice is a big one, confidential records, that kind of thing. But again, that should be the exception and not the rule. Lastly, I guess generally public records, assume everything you do in connection with your job as a board member is a public record, and be on your best behavior, except obviously investigative files, that kind of thing, are not. And it should go without saying, but it's accepting bribes is a felony, so don't do that. I got a few other notes here. Just because a case is difficult, it's happened from time to time, doesn't mean that there shouldn't be discussion or decision on it. That's sort of the whole point of having all these board members here. It is totally fine for board members to disagree with one another. That's kind of the idea behind the deliberation, but you shouldn't recuse just because you don't want to take a position on something. And generally, don't do things that look bad. Don't take phone calls during a meeting. Don't text during a meeting. Don't have side conversations with people. Just generally pay attention and look like you're paying attention, because people come before the board. These matters are very important to them, and it's a big deal for a lot of these people. So that concludes my brief presentation, but I'm happy to answer any questions if anyone has any.
Questions from board members? Thank you, sir. Nice summary. Good guidelines. Now, next on the agenda is item 18, the call to the public. You have up to 2 minutes to make a statement on the record. This is not meant to be a two-way dialogue. The board may not discuss or take action on matters raised during the call to the public that are not explicitly identified on the agenda, but may respond to criticism, ask staff to review a matter, or ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. The board may impose on speakers reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions. Speakers are cautioned to refrain from discussing confidential information, and if such dialogue occurs, that dialogue will be terminated. I see Dr. Altman standing patient with Dr. Altman. Would you care to make a comment?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm a bit nervous. One of those days. You tell me. Is it on?
No.
Okay. I'm Dr. Andrew Altman, for the record. I'm involved in a multidisciplinary group, so there's many members from many disciplines there. So since I'm the chiropractor, guess where I get to go today? This is an issue that's affecting multiple different boards. You guys are not the only one. So I'll just let you know, not a new thing. It has to do with R4-7-101, basically adequate patient records. I start off by saying that this is basically an easy fix. I'm here because there are many in my position, particular situation, I'm very fearful of retaliation. It's real. Probably why I'm shaking. I'm here because of many of my colleagues and myself been in front of an examining board and where they went fishing through our records that had nothing to do with our original complaint. The Auditor General has pointed out and the examining board replied and agreed that they won't be doing that anymore, fishing, quote unquote. And I'm grateful for that. You guys presented well. My question to the board is, how are they going to go to make restitution for those of us that are on the website of the examining board? I've been asked to join a potential lawsuit on this issue. I also informed the Chiropractic Association about this. The reply that I've been giving is this is an easy fix. Let's see what the board is willing to do. Give them the ability to do something, not just condemn them. Let's see if we can get it fixed. It should be a really simple thing. They've been working really hard and trying to get things going. If they can get us off the website, give an apology letter so it doesn't affect our insurance rates, this could be a win-win for both. I'm trying to make it easy for everybody. Again, this is not just this board, okay? I think I'll conclude it. That matter here. I'm sorry. I'm reading really quick and shaking.
I have like 20 seconds if you want to use.
I don't know any good songs, so I think I'm just going to pass. All right, Dr. I'll make sure.
Thank you very much for your comments. Are there any other comments from the call to the public? Anybody else care to make a statement? I do not have access to the Zoom meeting. There are no raised hands. All right. I'll call again. Second call. Still no raised hands. Third call. No raised hands. Good. We're going to call that finished. The next regular meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, March 19, 2025 at 9 a.m. at the 1740 West Adams Street, boardroom C, same place here. And the time is currently 11:17, and this meeting stands adjourned.